Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a really interesting look, sort of a shortcut, into a brand new training session.
Yeah, it's from Dr. Scott Taransky's latest parenting course. You probably know him, 18 books, National Center for Biblical Parenting, big voice in this area.
Absolutely. And we're zeroing in on something most families know well, sibling conflict.
Right. The session's actually called Turning Rivalry into Relationship Training. And the mission, it's about flipping conflict from, you know, this constant headache into actual teaching moments. Goldmine stuff, really.
Okay, I like that framing.
Yeah.
But the first idea is a bit challenging, isn't it? It pushes back against just accepting constant fighting as, well, normal.
Exactly. The training argues that if normal means kids fighting all the time, then aiming for normal is, well, it's setting the bar too low.
Especially when, you know, sources like Psalm 133 talk about how good it is when brothers dwell in unity. That's a much higher standard.
It is. And if we aim higher, we need the tools, right? That's where this whole approach comes in. The core idea, the framework, is that the family, it's basically God's classroom.
A classroom.
Yeah. Specifically for training the heart, for relationships. So conflict, that isn't just background noise. It's like the syllabus.
Okay, wow. That's a deep concept. A classroom for the heart. So what does the actual teaching look like? The material points inward, doesn't it? Cites
right.
James 4.1.
Spot on. The fights come from desires that battle within you. It's internal.
Right.
So the root is desire. And the key tool for parents is tracing how that escalates. You have these desires, right? And when they get really strong, they morph into expectations.
Okay.
And then when those expectations don't get met, bam, they become demands.
Yeah, that's a really clear framework. Desire to expectation to demand. So parents aren't just reacting to the shouting.
No, they've got a blueprint. They can trace that tantrum, that fight, back to its source. Maybe an unmet expectation that became a rigid demand. It gives you clarity right in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, clarity instead of just frustration.
And that clarity connects to this almost mathematical definition they use. It simplifies things, but honestly makes the parent's job harder in a way.
How so? What's the definition?
Conflict equals problems or, you know, differences plus emotion?
Problems plus emotion.
Okay.
So if I'm getting this right, the training says most of us parents, we jump in when the emotion part is sky high.
Exactly.
And we only try to fix the problem. Take the toy, see whose turn it is, whatever.
And that right there, that's the huge missed opportunity. When you solve the problem for them, when you play referee, sure, you might quiet things down for a minute.
Yeah, feels like you fixed it.
Right. But you've taught the kids zero. Absolutely nothing about how to handle it themselves next time. No negotiation, no self-control practice, no problem-solving skills. You just stopped the noise, but you didn't actually teach anything.
That's hard to hear. Because that referee impulse, it's so strong, isn't it, to just make it stop. But this is saying that impulse actually undermines the bigger goal.
Yes.
We have to, like, consciously be less effective at instantly stopping the fight.
Yes.
So we can prioritize the teaching moment.
Yeah.
That takes incredible self-control from the parent.
It really does. You have to tolerate your own discomfort, sit with that chaos for a bit to stay in teacher mode, and to do that well, the material suggests starting by figuring out what kind of conflict it is.
Yeah.
They break it down into three main root problems kids face that cause these fights.
Right. Dr. Taransky identifies three core areas, but frames them as opportunities, not just problems. First one is anger.
Yep, anger.
Second is selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is foolishness. So if you know the category, you know which tool to grab.
Mm-hmm.
Let's dig into anger first.
Okay. So anger often pops up when kids just don't have another plan for disagreement, right? It's the default. To help them, parents need to understand the trigger. The training points to five common sources for kids' anger.
Okay, what are they? Number one is blocked goals. Like the classic sibling dancing right in front of the TV when you're trying to watch.
Totally. Number two, violated rights. That it's my turn feeling, you took what was mine.
Got it. What's three?
Three is unmet expectations, which, like we said, comes straight from those strong desires that didn't pan out.
Makes sense.
Four is perceived unfairness, which feels very real to a child. And number five is simply pain. Physical hurt. Anger is often a really natural, almost automatic reaction to pain.
Okay, so knowing the source helps.
Yeah.
But then what? What does a parent actually do when anger is running high?
Yeah.
There are five rules, right?
Yeah.
Non-negotiables.
Yeah, five practical steps. And rule one is absolutely foundational. Do not try to reason with an angry child.
Oh, man, I make that mistake all the time. Trying to talk logic when they're screaming.
We all do. But their emotional brain is firing on all cylinders. The logical part is basically offline. Trying to debate usually just pours fuel on the fire. It rarely works.
Okay, No reasoning. What's rule two?
Require separation to calm down. This is crucial.
Right.
The child needs space, physical or emotional, to let that intense emotion drop before any problem solving can happen. Mm. It might be a hug, a connected separation, or maybe just some time in the hall. The goal's the same.
Yeah.
Lower the emotional temperature. You just can't solve problems well when you're seeing red.
Okay, that makes sense. Separate to de-escalate. Rule three?
Rule three is about teaching a life lesson. Anger is a signal, but it's never a solution.
It signals, real.
Hey, there's a problem here. But using anger to solve the problem, that just leads to hurt feelings, broken trust, damaged relationships.
So you teach that explicitly.
Yes. And then, once calm is back, you move to rule four, the debrief. This is where the real teaching happens. It's intentional.
Okay.
Instead of just saying, don't hit your brother, you ask questions like, what did you do wrong there? Or what could you have done differently? Get them thinking.
Ah, so it shifts the focus from just punishment to like self-reflection and planning for next time. It empowers them.
Exactly. And that leads perfectly into rule five.
Yeah.
Practice alternatives. Practice.
Okay.
And there's a really good story in the material about this, isn't there? With a 14-year-old boy.
Yes. It's a great example. This 14-year-old was having major trouble with his 9-year-old brother. The parents even admitted the younger one was, quote, certified annoying.
Oh, okay.
And the older boy kept getting in trouble because his reaction was always anger, escalating things.
So the parents saw this not just as a problem, but as a training ground.
Mm-hmm.
What was the first assignment?
The first assignment wasn't even about solving the annoyance. It was just about managing his own anger. Simple instruction. Every time your brother starts being annoying, just walk out of the room. Don't engage.
Okay. Did it work?
He did it. For a whole week, he just removed himself. Step one, success.
Nice.
But then the parents raised the bar. They explained, look, that's great, but someday you're going to be in an office or maybe on a factory floor working next to someone annoying.
Oh, I see where this is going.
And you can't just walk out then. Suddenly, it wasn't just about his little brother anymore.
It clicked. It's about life skills, future competence.
Yeah.
So what was the harder assignment?
Stay in the room. Stay physically present, but find a different non-angry response. Something other than blowing up or walking out.
And did he manage that?
He nailed it. He came back the next week and reported that instead of escalating, he just tried saying calmly, would you cut it out?
That simple.
That simple. Low emotion, direct communication. And it worked. It stopped the annoying behavior. It's kind of amazing how often the simple, calm solution gets missed when we're caught up in the drama, isn't it?
It really is. Wow. That's fantastic relationship training hidden inside sibling squabbles. Okay, let's shift gears. The second big cause of conflict, selfishness. It shows up a lot as like competition, right? Demanding everything be fair.
Exactly. And that leads straight into the first solution for selfishness. Parents need to actively destroy the fairness trap.
Destroy it? How? We spend so much time trying to make things equal. Same number of cookies, same amount of screen time.
I know. It feels like the right thing to do, treating them equally to avoid jealousy. But the course argues that trying for equality actually increases comparison and competition.
Huh. That is counterintuitive. So what's the alternative to equal?
Treat them uniquely and specially according to their individual needs, not just trying to match things ounce for ounce. They use the parable of the talents as an example. The master didn't give each servant the same number of talents.
Right. One got five, one got two, one got one.
Each got what they could handle, what was appropriate for them. The goal wasn't equality. It was stewardship based on uniqueness.
Okay. But how does a parent handle the pushback? The kid who feels like they got the one talent when their sibling got five, how do you defend treating them uniquely?
It comes down to the relationship and the intention. When you focus on giving each child what they uniquely need, maybe focus time on their specific hobby, or tailored help with a struggle, you show your job isn't just handing out equal portions. It's about nurturing their individual growth. And this even applies to how you intervene in fights. The material suggests sometimes pulling only one child out of a conflict, not necessarily as punishment.
But to equip them.
Exactly. You pull one aside and say, hey, I brought you out here so I can help you figure out a better way to handle this with your brother sister when you go back in. It reinforces that individualized coaching approach.
I like that. Individualized equipping. Okay, what's solution number two for selfishness?
Practicing servanthood. This directly tackles that self-focus. And a key part is distinguishing helpful reporting from selfish tattling.
Ah, the tattling issue. Big one. What's the difference?
Reporting is about actual danger or significant problems, you know, the cat's stuck in the dryer. Tattling is usually about trying to get someone else in trouble for your own benefit or satisfaction.
Right. So how do you use this to teach servanthood?
The application is genius, really. You turn tattling into a required act of service. Kid comes running, Dad, Sarah left her wet towel on the bathroom floor again.
Okay. What's the parent's move?
The parent says calmly, You're right. I see it. Thanks for noticing something that needed doing in our home. Would you please be a servant right now and go hang it up for her?
Whoa. So the tattler has to fix the problem.
Every single time. Or pick up the socks, or turn off the light. Even if they weren't the one who made the mess, each time you require them to serve instead of just complain or blame, you chip away a tiny piece of that selfishness. The focus shifts from whose fault is it to what needs doing.
That's powerful. Okay, and there's a third solution for selfishness.
Yes, and it's crucial. Turn the conflict itself into a practice session for them. Specifically, teach negotiation and compromise by making them solve their own problem.
How does that look? I remember an example with a stuffed giraffe.
That's the one. Two sisters fighting over the giraffe. Instead of taking it away or deciding for them, the parent put the giraffe on the table, had the girls sit down facing each other, and said, Okay, you two need to talk this out until you find a solution you both agree on.
So the parent becomes more like a moderator.
No.
Or a referee enforcing the process of negotiation, not deciding the outcome.
Precisely. They have to use their words, persuade, maybe compromise. If one child just refuses to engage or negotiate in good faith, that's when the parent might step in, maybe with separation, saying, okay, you need a break until you're ready to come back and actually work this out.
It completely transforms the fight from just noise into a mandatory practice session for essential life skills.
Wow.
Exactly. It's skill building. Okay, ready for the final cause of conflict.
Let's do it. Number three, foolishness.
And foolishness in this context is defined mostly as just not thinking ahead. Not recognizing the consequences of your actions.
This is where stuff like teasing goes too far, right? Or roughhousing, like tickling or a squirt gun fight, gets out of hand because one kid isn't reading the cues that the other one wants to stop.
That's exactly it. And that leads directly to solution number one for foolishness. Implement a mandatory family-wide stop rule.
A stop rule.
Yeah.
Simple, but sounds essential.
Totally non-negotiable for keeping the peace and respecting boundaries. When one child says stop, the other child must stop immediately. No arguments, no, just one more second. Stop means stop.
And the training says the parent should actually practice this.
Yes, like the parent might tickle the child and keep going until the child says stop, and then the parent stops instantly. It teaches the child firsthand that their word stop has power and will be respected. It empowers them to use their voice instead of, say, hitting or shoving to make something cease.
That makes sense. Build the habit through practice.
And this rule isn't just for siblings. It's so important, the training says, that it extends to others. If, say, Uncle Billy comes over and starts tickling and the child says stop, but he doesn't.
The parent steps in.
The parent backs the child up, supports them in teaching Uncle Billy the family's stop rule. It reinforces the child's right to set boundaries and feel safe, even with other adults.
That's really important. Okay. Solution two for foolishness deals with deflection. Right.
Dang.
Yes, the classic lines, but I didn't mean to hurt him, or I was just joking. Lighten up.
Happens all the time. How do you counter that?
The parent has to insist on personal responsibility for the action, regardless of intent. The line was crossed, something went wrong, someone got hurt or upset. Parent needs to ask, okay, but what did you do wrong?
Focusing on the action, not just the intent.
Right, because harm was done. If the child keeps deflecting or refuses to identify what they did wrong, the parent shouldn't let it slide. The parent provides the answer. You kept poking him after he asked you to stop. That's what you did wrong. And then requires the child to repeat it. No escaping responsibility.
That's a tough lesson, but vital. Because life often holds us accountable for our actions' impact, not just our intentions.
Okay.
Final solution for foolishness.
Solution three. Practice the try again principle.
Try again. How does that work?
It's about immediately rerouting the behavior. So if the kid's messed up using the stop rule during that squirt gun fight, you don't just punish and move on. You might send them back to try it again correctly. You could say, okay, go back, let your brother squirt you one more time. Then you say, stop, clearly. And this time, brother, you are going to practice stopping immediately. Let's see you do it right.
So it's like immediate corrective practice, building a new muscle memory almost.
Exactly. These deliberate, guided redos help break the old, negative pattern and build the new, positive one. It's like targeted homework for behavior patterns.
Okay, this is all incredibly practical. If we zoom out again, connect all these pieces, the big theme seems to be that this sibling rivalry stuff, it's not just noise to be managed.
Not at all. It's actually an invaluable built-in life skills program happening right in your home.
The home is the classroom.
The kids are the students.
The parent is the teacher.
And wisdom, relationship wisdom, is the curriculum. Every single fight is like a scheduled class ready to build character if we see it that way.
That's a powerful reframe.
It is. And maybe the final, most critical piece of advice is actually for the parent. For you, the listener. When that conflict erupts, the first thing you need to do.
What's that?
Check your own emotions before you wade in.
Manage my own reaction first.
Yeah.
Ask myself, am I so worked up right now that my only goal is to shut this down, solve the problem immediately, and probably steal the teaching moment?
Exactly. Or can I manage my own feelings, stay calm enough to step in as the coach, the teacher, and intentionally use this moment to guide my kids?
That's self-regulation from the parent. It sounds like that's the key that unlocks this whole approach.
It really is. The difference between another exhausting battle and a genuinely productive lesson often hinges entirely on whether the adult in the room can stay calm and intentional.
Wow. A fantastic deep dive. Really practical tools for navigating sibling conflict. If people want to learn more about this specific session or Dr. Taransky's broader curriculum.
Yeah, they can find it all over at biblicalparenting.org.
Great. And I guess the final thought for you, the listener, is that challenge. Next time the fighting starts, just pause for a second. Remember you're the teacher. And maybe start class.